Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Tuesday afternoon, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We always love catching up with former Titan safety Michael Griffin, and he is on the line with us. Michael, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Oh, good. It's always good to talk to you. You and the family safe these days?
Yeah, you know, I'm the one that has to go out in the war zone, go grocery shopping and those type of things. So the wife and the kids get to sit at home peacefully. I finally get to tell her that I'm the wife of the family now, and she cannot tell me that I don't do anything at all. So. Roles are reversed now in the house.
You took the words out of my mouth. It looks like the roles have reversed.
Roles are reversed, yes. Initially, it was she held down the fortress and I was out. Now it's, you know, I got to go out and buy the groceries. And it's amazing how it's kind of complicated because sometimes, you know, you go through the whole pantry and you want to buy what you want to eat. But then you got to make sure you know where everybody else eats. And sometimes I buy a little too much just because I get a little finger happy of just grabbing things. Like, I look like I might eat this, I might eat this, I might eat that. So it's my bills are a lot larger than hers when we come home on what we spent at the grocery store.
Oh, that's funny. What did you make of you played with Jarrell Casey? You understand what it's like to go through what he, and you know, he put his heart and soul into his time here, a third round pick that you know, made it, and not only made it, but got the big payday as well and was rewarded for his play on the field. And then he does a podcast with the McCourty twins and, of course, Jason, who was a teammate of both of you guys. You know, he said he kind of, you know, paraphrase or really his words, where he felt like, you know, the trash. He got put out with the trash and just didn't like the way it ended. How do you balance that as a player where you know it's business – but you know it's also personal?
It's hard because, I mean, I've dealt with it. You know, I played with Tennessee for 9 years, and it was trying to, you know, that last year I think might have been the toughest year for me because mentally you're trying to convince yourself that, you know, I was a Viking or I was a Carolina Panther. And deep down inside of you, you know, you felt like you did everything you possibly could to make an organization and the coaches and them proud of you and feel like that, you know, they probably could have, you know, maybe offered you a pay cut or asked you to prove yourself or whatever it may have been, you know, through training camp or whatever. But again, I mean, it's hard. It is hard. I've been there. It puts you in a deep place. You know, on the outside eyes, like, hey, you're blessed. You get opportunity. You're still playing. You're still making the money and everything else. But again, when you're in that locker room with your friends, your family, and you really trust the coaches and everything else, I mean, it's hard to say, yes, it is a business. But at the same time, you know, your coaches is your coaches, and you trust them, and then you have conversations with them and the general manager, and you high five, you dap each other up 24/7, and then next thing you know, you're traded. It's I'm telling you, it's almost like you feel like you've been cheating on in a marriage or something. It's tough. It's a tough situation. But at the same time, it's a business. And you just hope and pray that, you know, that he can, you know, get over that emotional state, because you don't want to keep playing with that, because it's hard to go out there each and every day, especially to play for another team, and you really feel like that you're a Titan, but now you're trying to do everything you can for this team, and it's a tough place. It's a tough place unless you've actually been there before. I'm sure Jason McCourty been through it also. You know, he went to the Cleveland Browns, and then he got traded over, and I remember talking to him. He was in a tough place or whatever, and now he's happy as ever being able to play with his brother, win a Super Bowl. Who wouldn't be? But I know there was a point in time where he was feeling some type of way about the whole situation also.
Is there any way, is there any good way to do it? I mean, to me, it's like, it's like a relationship breaking up. There's like no good time. There's no good way to do it. I guess the bad way to do it would be via text, in my opinion, or email. But someone being let go at work. Like it's never. So how do you go about? Because I know I understand his side. Like I understand a player's side, the side you were on, but I also understand the business side. It's like there's no easy way to do it, right?
I don't think there is an easy way to do it. I don't because either way is one side is going to be more hurt than the other. I remember like yesterday, right after the Super Bowl in San Francisco, I forgot who was playing. I think it was Carolina Panthers versus the Denver Broncos. And I remember the day after the Super Bowl, I just got back. It was snowing and everything. I remember I got a phone call from Coach Malarkey at the time, and he asked me, could I come in? And I remember, I called one of the other coaches and asked what was going on, and he said, hey, they just came in the office, and they John Robinson is going to release you. And I was like, okay. So I remember coming in and kept my car running and went and told Matt, to be exact, and Hoss, hey, can y'all pack my locker up and just throw it in my car? They're like, what are you talking about? I was like, I'm being released. They're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I'm being released. Just throw my stuff in the car, because I've been there. I've seen it. I heard everything. I heard, they said they're going to bring me back. They said because it, I heard everything. I understand. You try to smooth things out. And I remember going in the office, and I remember John Robinson talking to me, and I told him, all due respect, John Robinson, I respect you. I'm sure you respect me. There's nothing really you could tell me that's going to make this situation feel any better. You don't know me, and I don't know you. I know you're doing a job, and I respect that. You're asked to run a multi-billion dollar organization. I respect that. But if you just tell me a whole bunch of BS, I'm going to lose all respect for you. So out of respect for me, if you're releasing me, all right, tell me what I need to sign, what I need to go do, and we'll keep it moving because – there's really nothing that you can actually tell me to make me feel better, and there's nothing really I can tell you or whatever that's going to make this be any more better than what it is, what it is. So I laugh every time I tell him. When I see him, I say, you probably did the best job. You released me and you found Kevin Byard. Like, it worked out great.
So what did he say, Michael, when you said that to him? Because I'm dying to hear his response after you said that.
His response was, I respect that. Can you go see Coach Dick LeBeau? He said he wanted to speak with you before you leave. Because it was nothing really to be said. I'm firing you. What are we going to talk about?
Right,
nothing
right.
really to talk about. Like, you want a pat on the back? Do you want me to give you a get well soon cupcake or something? I mean, I don't know. It's nothing really to be said. And then it was funny because I remember walking out, and then you got those two guys, I call them the Green Reapers, that are, like, following you, but they're interns. And he's like, hey, I need you to give me your playbook. I'm like, dude, we went, like, 3-13. You think we got a playbook in February? Like, we gave our playbooks in on the last day. Like, do y'all even know how to do your job? I think I could do your job a lot better than you can. So I remember just hanging out and talking to Jason McCourty because he had an injury that year, and we're hanging out in the training room, and they're like, Griff, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I don't work for y'all no more, but I'm just going to hang out for a little bit longer, talk to all y'all before I get up out of here. And got out of there, and it's funny because now every time I show up, it's like you got to go through that whole protocol that everybody else got to go through. Like, hey, put your finger on the little thing and then put the little name tag on your chest, and it's like, it's a real business. So, I mean, now 4 years later, hey, great, cool. But at the time, it's definitely an emotional roller coaster that you got to somewhat figure out how to get over, especially with Jarrell Casey. He got a lot left in the tank. I was on the tail end of my career, it is what it is. I'm able to admit that age caught up with me and everything else. So I'm cool. I'm happy where I'm at today. I'm pleased. I was blessed. I thank the Adams family for giving me the opportunity to be in where I'm at right now. And again, I have no hard feelings. At the time, yes, you're upset. But again, I mean, the first game of the season is Denver Broncos versus the Tennessee Titans. So I don't know what to tell you. If Casey wants to get some gift back, he definitely has a great opportunity to show that they might have messed up. I don't know.
Yeah. By the way, good job by you working cupcakes into the John Robinson story. Well played.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it. GG's. If anybody know which one is GG's, you got to always market yourself, especially right now with COVID-19 or whatever. We do online orders, and we do Grubhubs and things of that nature. So, yes, it works out tremendously for people.
Well done. Willie?
Well done. Michael Griffin is with us, two-time Pro Bowler, 10-year veteran for the Titans, of course, former University of Texas great, and he's now doing some work as well with the Longhorn Network. And, you know, Michael, it's interesting. We've had so many of the classic games in front of us. If you want to watch a game, it's a classic game. So the good news is it's a great game. If you're going to sit down and watch it, it's worth watching again. The bad news is, of course, we know who wins and all that. We want competition that's fresh as soon as we can. But we had a guest on named Richard Justice, a baseball writer, a few weeks ago. He said he had watched the Texas-USC game multiple times during this. Richard Justice, not David Justice.
Oh, okay. I'm going to say yeah. David Justice from the Atlanta Braves. I was a big fan.
Oh, that would have been great. Yeah, if you have David's number, we'd love to have him on the show as well. But Richard Justice.
Too. Okay, Richard Justice. I'm sorry, Richard. Jump the gun.
But I think he's a Texas fan. That's what I got the signal that what he was saying. But nonetheless, you know, you have the distinction of playing in one of the greatest college football games of all time. I mean, anytime they're showing classic games, that is going to be heavily rotated. As you get more removed from that game, what are your thoughts? Like when that comes on again, do you watch it? Do you want to watch it? How many times have you watched it since you actually played in it?
I actually watched it the very first time since I played in it during this whole COVID-19 at Longhorn Network. I took over for the Twitter and watched it and was able to tweet things out or whatever. And it was the first time I actually watched it. And I will say it was the first time I ever watched Vince Young play. And reason being is I always been on the same team as him. And when he was out there on the field, I was always on the sideline going over adjustments and things of that nature. So this time I actually got to watch him play, and I was really, 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 really impressed. Like, I see why the talk of him being probably the greatest college, probably one of the greatest college football players ever, but let alone quarterbacks ever to play the game, because it was impressive. Like, just watching him play was impressive, especially versus that USC defense. I mean, they had Brian Cushing, Keith Rivers, Ray Maluga, a lot of guys, Darnell Bing. I mean, the list just goes on when you think about that team. So it was very impressive just to watch what he did versus that USC defense. And on the defensive side for us, I mean, it was just great rewatching this. It was a lot of jokes. Me, Michael Huff, Brian Arakpo, Jamal Charles. We laughed about a lot of jokes. We laughed. Jamal actually like fumbled. I think he either fumbled the ball, or almost fumbled the ball, but they called an incomplete pass. We laughed about that. Laughed at Brian Arakpo. Michael Huff told him, like, "Did you even play? Oh, I see you got one tackle for the whole game." It's just a lot of stuff that we just joked internally about ourselves. Then we laughed because Lindell White stepped on Michael Huff, and then Reggie Bush scored his touchdown and got me. I realized how fast he really was when he got around the outside. Just things like that. We just went back and rewatched it. But it was really a great, great game. We kind of got upset at our field goal kicker because he kind of put us in a tough situation because he missed the field goal and missed the extra point. We probably wouldn't have been in such emotional at the time because we didn't know if we were going to win or not when we realized that we missed those key kicks. But, again, it was a great game.
So some unbelievable talent, as you kind of documented, that was in that game. How often you became teammates, of course, with Lindell White? I mean, there were some guys on your team that ended up being on the Titans. Lindell White was, Norm Chow was there for a while as well. How much did you guys end up talking about that game in a Titans locker room?
Oh, you know Lindell. You know Lindell. You know Lindell's going to let you know. He's going to let you know he had three touchdowns. They don't know why they didn't give him the ball more. We couldn't stop him. He just kept going on and on and on. So, yeah, Lindell let it be known. I keep telling Lindell, "You want to see my ring? It got a number one on it, and it has the score with me versus you." So, but it was a great game because again, everybody was watching. It was January 4th, to be exact, 2005. It's actually my 21st birthday, so it was my birthday that day. So
wow,
that's a great way to celebrate it. And it was just all around. I mean, it was just a lot of talent that was out there. Two Heisman Trophy winners, two Thorpe Award winners were out there. If you go back to the Nagurski Award and things of those nature that Brian Arakpo won later on, a running back who's the all-time yards per carry as in Jamaal Charles at 5.4. So there's a lot of talent that was out there. Maybe wasn't that talent that giving day or that year, but went to go on to become great, great football players. You know, with Khalil playing forever at the center position for the Carolina Panthers. It was a lot of talent out there, a lot of talent. And a lot of those guys out there went on to NFL and became staples of their teams. So it just lets you know how much talent that was really out there on that given day.
Was there any moment that you forgot, that you had forgotten, until you watched it back, whether it involved a play maybe you were in or just something that happened in the game? I totally forgot that that happened.
There's not. I mean, I kind of remember it vividly, like literally vividly. I remember the game. I mean, not necessarily on the offensive side, but on the defense, I pretty much remembered everything vividly. I would say this: the first punt, we stopped them in three. At the first, was open the game up. I forgot that Aaron Ross fumbled the opening punt return. He fumbled it, and they got the ball back. I forgot all about that play. Hmm. And, again, he went on the very next year to win the Thorpe Award, so that just tells you what type of talent of player he was. And he also won two Super Bowl rings, and not to mention that his wife won as a four-time Olympian gold medalist. So, I forgot all about that play in the opening. I mean, it could have got ugly very quickly, but we had managed to hold him to 3 points.
Wow. It's amazing how some people can remember so many details and others it's just a blur, even though they had a big part in the game. Michael Griffin is with us, the former Titan. So, Michael, I've always enjoyed getting your perspective on all these issues, which is why we're having you on today. So in the wake of all that's happened here and the social consciousness, the mode we're all in right now, turning all of this energy into some positive changes going forward. Let's say you're on a committee of players and you're talking about how to channel this in the best possible way. What are some of the thoughts that go through your mind that they should be talking about?
For me, you have to be open for conversation and communication. And when I say listen, it's not listen to respond, but listen to comprehend. And you got to stop the finger pointing. The more you see on social media and everything else, if somebody doesn't agree with you, you label them, whether they're you label them, and the word racist is used so loosely, because of this matter. At this point of matter, it's almost like as the black community, we're trying to find a way to use racist, and then as the white community, we're trying to prove that we're not racist, but we're trying so hard as the white community to prove that we're not racist that sometimes we just say the wrong things and it's interpreted a certain way, because if you tweet something and you text something or whatever, you don't know the emotions behind it, so you can interpret it however you're feeling that type of way. So I really think in order to bring change, it has to be communication and conversations. From both sides, a lot of things and experiences in life is why you perceive and why it molds you. You know, as a kid, you know, I have a 3-year-old, I have a 10-year-old as of yesterday, and then I have a 12-year-old. The things that they go through today molds them to who they're going to become as adults. And it's the same thing with if you're raising, you know, a puppy. You know, the more exposure and the more that you get, you know, the puppy out and about, the least timid it will be, the more it'll know how to react in certain situations. So I think that's where we're at right now, is we just got to be open to conversations and be willing to listen and be able to embrace one another, love one another. to continue in what happened in the past, as in history, that is history. And that's something that we're always going to take with us. Whether we eliminate statues or whatever it may be, it's something that's going to still be in the history books and things that we're going to continue to talk about over the course of time. But, again, I think the biggest thing is conversation. I live in a predominantly, I like to say, white class neighborhood. And, you know, there was conversations going on. I told people I'm very willing to have an open conversation, to talk. You know, I can hear your side, you can hear my side, and we can have our views and we can agree to disagree. But at the same time, if you respect one another, we can get a long way. If you disrespect one another, we can't get anywhere. So I think that's just where it comes down to, is being able to have to be cordial enough to respect one another. Understand that words do hurt and they can be perceived in so many different ways. So if I label you a racist, it may make you feel a certain type of way. The same way if you call me, you know, the N-word or anything else that may be derogatory to myself, or if you call a young woman the B-word. So at the same time, we just got to be respectful to one another, and stop using the word so loosely, but have conversations. Because if we don't have conversations, we're not going to get anywhere. We're just going to continue to point the finger and be divided and segregated within.
Well, we always enjoy our conversations with you, and we certainly appreciate you jumping on with us, as always. Would love to continue this conversation down the road because it needs to be had, and certainly your perspective we appreciate and respect, and maybe we can do that here sooner rather than later. Thanks for doing this, as always.
Hey, appreciate y'all as always. I hope y'all taking care of yourselves, family, and everybody's safe, and hopefully we have a football season we can catch up soon.
Fingers crossed. The same to you and your family. Thank you, Griff.
Thank y'all. Y'all take care. Thank y'all. God bless you.
Former Titan safety Michael Griffin joining us here on Darren Donick and Chase. We'll come back with more here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hey, if you own or manage a small business, you're open, you want to let people know about it, got a great plan for you. It's on Fridays. It's called Free Business Friday right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And it's an opportunity for you to get free advertising. If you're a local business and you're open and you're working, that's a no cost, no catch offer to you. It doesn't get any better than that. You can go to our website, thegamenashville.com/FBF. That's gamenashville.com/FBF for more information. Of course, FBF, Free Business Friday. It's our way of supporting small businesses as we get through this together. And I hope a lot of you jump on. We've been doing this now for a while, and it has been highly successful. And hope if you haven't taken advantage of this, you should do it, especially now that things are back safely open and things are getting going again. Good stuff there from Michael Griffin. Of course, he's always good with us, so no surprise there. But the guy that has good perspective, had good perspective on what Jarrell Casey is going through. I loved the story that he had with John Robinson. I mean, I love that story. I mean, it doesn't get any more genuine and candid and honest than that. And I'm sure John Robinson appreciated it because, like I said, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday, what are you supposed to do? Like, I understand both sides. I get the player side. It's personal, yet there's a business side, or the personal side. I understand the business side. And I know both of them have to deal with business and both of them have to deal with personal. But I do understand both sides. And like I said, it's like a breakup. It's like the tough decision at the workplace. There's no easy conversation. There's no easy way around it. There just isn't.
It's not you. It's me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, nobody wants to hear that.
Right.
You know, nobody cares about the we wish them the best in their future endeavors email after it's over. I mean, come on. You know, that's about as – I don't even know what's the point of saying that. It literally means nothing. It really does, because there's no good way to say it. There just isn't.
Right. But you still have to send that email because you don't want somebody calling, hey, Frank, can you I'm not there anymore. Oh,
yeah.
Well, this is awkward.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you have to tell the workplace, yeah, of course, someone's no longer there, the workplace. And you're right. Once again, I poke fun, but what is the right thing to say? I don't know. We're back to square one. There isn't the right thing because it's tough. And John Robinson was like, Whoo! And he took, I mean, he made it easy for me. It's not fun to do that. And Michael Griffin just walked in and said, look, if you're cutting me, just cut me. That's just what it is. You don't know me. I don't know you. It's a business. You're taking over things here. You're running this, you know, billion-dollar ship, and you got to make tough decisions. And if today is one of those tough decisions, I can respect it, but let's get on with it. There's no point. He even right. said, if you notice, he said, I left my car running. Did you catch that?
Yeah, I did. I thought that, yeah, and I thought that was interesting. And he joked, too, and because he told a little bit of this when I did game night with him a couple weeks ago, and that he now, you know, now everything's cool. He came back. He did a coaching internship, I believe it was last season or the season before during training camp. And so, you know, obviously John Robinson is here, and he tells John Robinson whenever he sees him that the best thing he ever did was cutting Michael Griffin, because then he got Kevin Byard. So that obviously worked out. So you can tell that they moved on. But, yeah, I did notice that. He said, left my car running and told the guys to put my stuff in the car, and it was go in and take care of it and then leave and move on. And that's what he did.
Something that shouldn't surprise anybody, but it is interesting as we have people on the show to talk about it. Coming out of the Chris Lowe interview last hour and the Michael Griffin interview this hour, is, and I firmly believe they are correct, relationships are going to change, right, moving forward. And this is a part of what we've been talking about. This is a good thing, because I feel like certainly we're not at the finish line. Nobody's saying that. But I feel like this country is at least turning a corner. How significant is that? I don't know. Is that good enough for some people? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I do feel like it's not just a, you know, a 5-minute news story and it's going to go away. Like, I believe we really have turned a corner. It's not enough, but it's a step in the right direction. And as I've been saying consistently, you're not going to be able to snap your fingers and it's over and it's fixed. This is not a quick fix, unfortunately. But Chris Lowe talked about it on the college side with these student athletes and their coaches. And you just heard Michael Griffin talk about it on the NFL side. It is going to change. Like, and we've already found out that Mike Vrabel is having, and we had a great conversation with Rashawn Evans, that Mike Vrabel is having that conversation. I think maybe there needs to be more conversations, like Chris Lowe said, Johnny Majors, that you could sit there and just talk and it not be about football, right? How about just that? That's a good start.
Right.
A big part of this is relationships. Like that's a lot of what's broken is the relationship with in certain markets, certain cities, certain areas. There's a real breakdown. There's a real disconnect. There's a real discord with the police department and the community, right? And to me, the only way you have a chance at trying to tackle this tough issue is trying to repair that very, very broken relationship. True?
Absolutely true.
Well, you referenced the story of Mike Norvell, and I thought that was really interesting because in light of Chris Lowe talking about how you could talk to Johnny Majors for a long time and not have football come up, I think it's really important that you do have these long one-on-one conversations about life, right? I mean, you really have an obligation, I think, as a football coach and a mentor, and not just the head coach, but really everybody on the staff for any team, whether we're talking about a football team or any sports team. You know, you want to, especially at that age, you want those players to grow up, right? Chris told the great story about the former player who went on, I think it was Keith DeLong. Is that what he said? Is that the name of the player? Where, you know, they had the dinner or the lunch years later, you know, was I too hard on you? I'm glad you were hard on me, right? I'm glad you made me a better person. That should be music to any coach's ears, because that's really what it's all about years later. It's not as much about did you win the championship or not. It's nice if you did. You know, you want to maximize your potential, but you also want to have those guys grow. And so you have Mike Norvell, who's questioned. You know, he comes out and he says in an article basically that, yeah, we've had these one-on-one conversations about these issues, and a player says no. They send a text to the entire team, and that's all. We haven't had any one-on-one conversations. You know, that gets right to the heart of, you know, what's a coach's role, right? I know it's trickier now. You can't exactly walk over to a guy's dorm or tell a guy to come into the office right now. It's fragmented. But if you're gonna talk the talk, right, it's got to have substance behind it. If you're going to say you're communicating with your players, you have to really communicate. It can't just be a text to the group, right? We have to make sure we know how important detailed conversations are, not text messages, right? I thought that was a really interesting story. Yeah. Put Mike Norvell in a tough spot because now he's got to look himself in the mirror. Maybe it's the best thing that could happen to him, right? Maybe it's a great life lesson for him to learn, and now he might act differently going forward here.
Well, if he wants to get his team back, then he had to. He had no choice.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's not the way you want to walk into a brand new big time job. If you're Mike Norvell, right? I mean, that. By the way, that is the leader of that team. You talking about the voice in the room? That's the guy. And if that guy is calling you out, you got problems. You better fix it in a hurry. Because that guy's got more power in the room than you do, and you're the head coach. You know, that's the thing that a lot of these coaches need to figure out, especially on the college level. You may be the head coach, but there's some pretty powerful leaders in that room, and you really get down to the nitty-gritty, they got more power than you do. I guarantee you, they got the ear of the players more than you do.
No question. And I think also at such an important time, of where we are in our of what's going on, right? We're thinking about the world. We're trying to get through a pandemic. We have these social issues, the systematic racism that we're trying to tackle and discuss. Now more than ever is when a coach can play a huge role in having these dialogues, right? Especially when you're not allowed to practice, right? You can't be doing the 7-on-7s now. You're not in the normal routine. So this is the time that you can really, you know, talk about this stuff and really make the world better. You're influencing a lot of young men here. And I think that's a really important thing. I'm telling you, maybe in 5 or 10 years, Mike Norvell will be thankful that happened because this is his chance now to, you know, have the cold water thrown in his face and go, you know, I really screwed that up. I've got to get it together in this area.
Right. And you know, I can just relating it to what we do. I mean, I can remember some of the first lessons that you guys taught me in this business is it's all about relationships and building relationships. And that's how you get info and, you know, can get people like Michael Griffin that he hasn't played here in some time, but he comes on the show. That's because of a relationship that was developed. And you have some people that even in this business that don't understand that and never have and never will. And it hurts them. But in this situation, you know, I think they're more important than ever because that's how you can navigate these waters and learn more about people and where they're coming from and build those relationships. And Mike Norvell is learning that the hard way, and sometimes you have to learn the hard way, but hopefully he will.
Do you believe that there's been a corner turned in the last couple of weeks?
Like overall?
Unfortunately, through a tragedy, but that's.
You're talking about within the college ranks or just in society?
Well, it all ties together, right? I mean, it is all lumped together. I mean, you can't say that there's not some similarities. I mean, it does. We're talking about the same thing society wise and in sports because we're a sports talk show. But do you feel like things have turned at least a corner, whatever that means, whatever size corner that is, do you guys believe that?
To an extent, yes. But it's one of the – I think more than ever we've seen a situation where people are paying attention to – and it's like you said earlier, of it's not a five-minute news story that just eventually fades and goes away. And I think part of the reason is there hasn't been sports to distract. I'm going to use that word and because I think that's happened in the past. I think there have been distractions that have come up and then the whole message that's trying to get across fades away. So I think that's a positive that we have to focus on this. We have to talk about it. And that's been good. To answer your question, though, I think it's to an extent. I think there's still a long way to go. I said it yesterday that NASCAR and the stance that they've taken is a huge moment for that sport that has had stereotypes for so long, that's a huge step. But they got to take even more steps. Bubba Wallace went on CNN last night and he said the next step in all this is NASCAR needs to ban the Confederate flag from racetracks. And I feel like that's going to happen. But
which has been a long time story.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
We've been talking about this for years.
But yeah, to me, that's a no-brainer at this point. And I'm surprised it hasn't happened already.
It should have been a no-brainer a long time ago.
Exactly.
You could argue,
but I give
Bubba Wallace credit for being bold enough to be the first driver I can really remember. Maybe there have been in the past, but to jump on that and say you're going out there knowing that there might be some people who have been very supportive of that sport for a long time that would disagree wholeheartedly with that. Right? I mean, he's willing to take it. I like that. But so to get to your question, Darren, I think there's an opportunity here, right, because of all the forces at play. And I do think the fact that in these sports forums, whether you're talking about a show on ESPN or any other sports channel, or we're all trying to have good, solid programming, good conversations with no games to analyze, you really have an opportunity to have discussions like this. So what do we do with that opportunity? How do we channel that into policy changes and, you know, habit changing, you know, real reform that's the end goal. You know, it's not going to happen overnight. It's only going to happen if we continue to mobilize and think the same way and really push towards it. We've got to continue to do it. It can't just be a short-term conversation. It's got to turn into something.
No doubt about it. I was just reading where Jeremy Pruitt, Tennessee's football coach, told ESPN that 72 players returned last week, and of the 19 more who returned over the weekend, no players have tested positive for COVID-19.
Very good news.
Pruitt said that a grad assistant did and is being quarantined for 14 days. So there you go.
Wow.
Pretty good news on that front. That's almost 100 people, and just a grad assistant tested positive. All right, we will come back and wrap up the third hour of Darren Donick and Chase next. Former big league pitcher Kevin Jarvis, Nashvillian, will join us to start the fourth and final hour. His son is projected to go in the first round, Major League Baseball draft starting tomorrow. So hopefully Bryce Jarvis will indeed get drafted tomorrow in the first round. In fact, the last mock I looked at had your Braves, Chase, taking Bryce Jarvis.
Bring him on. Let's go.
That gets you excited?
It does. I like it. I like it. I like it a lot.
That would be pretty cool, huh?
Yeah. Close to home.
Also, you brought up the UFC, and they're going to, in mid-July, they're going to Paradise Island. No. It's not Paradise Island. That's in the Bahamas. But it's their own little island. But also,
isn't
they've
that where
announced...
Wonder Woman is from, Paradise Island? Is that right?
Is she from Paradise Island, the Bahamas?
I think so.
Okay.
Not the Bahamas, but there's a different Paradise Island. It's
okay.
You know, way off. It's like unknown how you get there and stuff, but that's where Wonder Woman honed her skills, I think.
Okay. I'll buy that.
Yeah.
Paradise Island in the Bahamas is really nice, though. We'll say that.
I've never been.
That's nice. Very nice. The UFC announced there's going to be a big fight, by the way, in mid-August. Have you seen this?
I have, because I sent it to you.
Oh, you did?
Oh, okay. Have you seen this? Well, as a matter of fact, I have.
Actually, yeah, I sent it to you. So, yeah.
You even read it.
Qualify as yes, I do know. Stipe Miocic, who played a year at Trevecca, played baseball at Trevecca for a year, who we've had I've had conversations with in the past about, and Daniel Cormier will fight a big, huge fight. What, for the third time in mid-August? Is that right?
That seems right. Yeah.
Yeah, third time.
So that will be a big one in the middle of August. Todd Gurley has passed his physical for the Falcons, so he will be suiting up for Atlanta this year. And did you guys see where Dalvin Cook has told the Vikings, yeah, I need a new deal. I'm going to hold out.
Good luck.
Yep.
Good luck with that one.
Now's a good time to do that, Dalvin. Now's a real good time to do that.
Exactly. That's funny that you guys said that because we haven't talked about it. And that was literally my first reaction of, okay, well, good luck. How many full seasons has Dalvin Cook played since he's been in the league?
He's had injuries.
Yeah, he's had some injuries. He's good back when healthy, but, you know, that when healthy part.
Let's see.
We'll come into the conversation.
He has been in the National Football League for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And am I correct in saying that the NFL, they play a 16-game season?
They do. Uh-huh.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has never played in 16 games in his three seasons.
In fact, the first year, he barely even played.
Yeah,
no, that is rookie year. Let's see. He had 2 touchdowns his rookie year. Second year, he had 2 touchdowns.
In 11 games.
In 11 games. In his third year, he had 13 touchdowns. It was his breakout year last year and ran for over 1,000 yards in only 250 attempts and in 14 games. So that was his first real productive year of the 3 years he's been in the league, and now he wants a raise.
Yeah.
Actually, a big raise.
You always see that.
Has he ever heard of a guy named Melvin Gordon?
Very good point. I was thinking that. Very good point.
Did he watch that play out? How that played out?
He might ought to give Melvin a call and just see, you know, just bounce that off.
Or actually Google it and just read the stories on what happened. How'd that work out for Melvin?
Who is now with? He's not even with the team that drafted him.
No, he'll be playing the Titans week one of the season. Didn't he come back? Was that his first game back or second game back? The game here against the Chargers last year.
I think so.
And first he got or second. I think it was a second because he played against, I think, the Dolphins the week before and just, you know, he dressed out and he got but he hadn't practiced a whole lot. I think that Titans game is one of the first that he was, if not the first, that he was really part of the game plan, but he was rusty. Like they. Remember how tight that game was, the goal line stand and all of those things, and he had the ball. You know, maybe if he's at full strength and he had played the whole year and he was in the groove, maybe he bursts in there and the Chargers win that game and the Titans don't ever make the playoffs. That was such a pivotal game in the Titans season. It saved the season, right? If they had not won that game.
Oh, no doubt.
I don't think they make it.
No doubt.
We should thank Melvin Gordon, I guess, for maybe not being at his best.
He ended up with a 2-year, $16 million contract with Denver.
All that, and he wanted, you know, way more than that and missed, half of a season?
Yep.
Half of a season's worth of paychecks with the Chargers that can't recoup that. So I always say, you keep holding out, players, that's fine. It's like, okay, Major League Baseball, We'll talk about this a little bit with Kevin Jarvis on the other side, but okay, great. So don't have a season. Hey, fantastic. Let's just say we view that as a win. You guys won against the owners and against the league. Well, great. You made zero money. No money this year. And so guess what? You don't recoup it. You don't get it back next year. You don't get to go say, hey, okay, now I want, let's see this, and then let's see, we got to make up for 2020. It's gone. Like, you don't get that back. So I don't understand what Dalvin Cook is doing. I mean, hold out. So the Vikings say, yeah, okay, great. we need you. We love you, but you know, we're not doing what you're asking us to do. So need you. You know, you can sit there, but you're not going to get paid. So what does he accomplish? By the way, did Melvin Gordon win? No. He just came back. He's like, oh, crap. I'm not going to win this. So I need to start collecting checks. And he came back, and Dalvin Cook's going to be in the same boat. Don't you think?
Oh, sure.
Who is advising him? That's what I don't get.
Wonder who his agent is.
I don't know.
Let's see. I'll have to find it.
Is it Bus Cook?
Zach Hiller Sports.
Zach Piller?
Yeah, Zach Piller.
Zach Piller. Well, we should call up Zach and ask him what kind of advice is that you're giving Dalvin Cook?
Zach Hiller.
Zach Killer. I don't know. I just shook my head and was like, huh, okay, I'm sure that'll work out well for you. Good luck.
I just, yeah. Especially now. Optics, people. Optics. Got to look at that.
Seem to be a little bit missing these days.
Yeah.
People aren't getting that memo, I don't think.
No, they're not. They just think it's a normal time and it's anything but. And so, you know, having a fight over money if you're baseball, and then if you're a football player holding out, especially, you know, with what he's done in 3 years. Like, come on, you've had one good season.
You've had 1 year. That's it. 1 year.
I don't believe.
Also, but this is the thing. Like, if one person, has his own views, he's got his reasons for it, and we all think he's way off track, which we do in this case. That's a little different than the baseball collective thinking, where nobody between the two sides is a voice of reason trying to there's no movement at all within the two sides saying, you know what, guys, we need to think about things outside of the actual dollars here. Nobody's doing that, you know, with all the people involved. Nobody that has any influence where they might be able to get through to somebody. Like, what does that say?
I know.
I think we've already said.
I mean, we've already been through said it. I mean, yeah.
I don't think our perspectives have changed since the beginning of the show. I don't get it. Let's throw out a hearty congrats to longtime successful Belmont basketball coach Rick Byrd. Did you guys see where he is going to be inducted into the OVC Hall of Fame?
That's pretty amazing. Very, very cool. When you consider Belmont hadn't been in the OVC that long. Like, I remember the press conference where they announced that they were going to the OVC. That wasn't that long ago. So he put together Hall of Fame credentials for a league that's been around for a long time in a pretty short period of time. The consistent winning that they have done, that is pretty remarkable.
He's already a member of the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame, the NAIA Hall of Fame, the Greater Knoxville Sports Hall of Fame, the Belmont Athletic Hall of Fame. He's a nominee for the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame, and now he can add OVC Hall of Fame to his list. Basically, anything and everything he's been a part of, he's in the hall.
If they have a hall and he was a part of it, he's in it.
That's right.
You know how many is that? Count them up again, Darren. How many? Seven?
So
while you count, I have a funny story about this.
So let's go through it again. Okay, ready?
Lindsey Rowley. I don't want to reveal the name of the person, but Lindsey Rowley was doing a field hockey game. She was broadcasting. She was the play-by-play, and she was doing the game with an analyst who was in four Hall of Fames, right? And in the media guide or in her bio, because she asked me about it, it said four-time Hall of Famer. And I was like, Lindsay, that doesn't sound, because she was asking me, does that sound right? I was like, no, I don't think that sounds right. Like, if you're in four Hall of Fames, you're not a four-time Hall of Famer. Like, once you're in the Hall of Fame, you don't come out and get voted back in, right?
Just like, so I was like, Hall of Famer.
I was like, you need. I was like, just before you introduce her as a four-time Hall of Famer, ask her. And sure enough, she does the game, and the girl's like, yeah, I'm a four-time Hall of Famer. I was like, okay,
that's,
it's like,
not how it works.
Okay, fine, you know, just go with it. If that's how she wants it, then just go with it. But I was like, that doesn't make any sense.
So I'm unaware. So you can get voted out of Hall of Fames and then
I don't know.
Back
no,
in?
She's in four different Hall of Fames. It's very clear. Just like Rick Byrd is in however many you just read off. But that doesn't mean he's a seven-time Hall of Famer. There's more than one Hall of Fame, and you go in there once and you stay in there.
Now,
I thought Mark come back out.
That's what I thought. Once you're in, you're in. I thought that's
yes,
how
it's
it works.
Yeah, but it's a lifetime thing.
As Marquise can back me up on, I mean, with wrestling, like, Ric Flair is a two-time Hall of Famer because he's in as an individual and he's in with the Four Horsemen. So now I understand it's wrestling and you guys are probably rolling your eyes, but in that case, I guess he can say he's a two-time Hall of Famer.
The lingo.
Nothing? I get nothing? No? Okay.
No, I get you, but it is the wide world of wrestling.
Yeah. I don't think we knew what how to garner a response for that. So let's go over it again. The Just Tennessee saying, Sports Hall of Fame, the NAIA Hall of Fame, the Greater Knoxville Sports Hall of Fame, the Belmont Athletic Hall of Fame, and he's a nominee for the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame, and now he's getting put into the OVC. So that's counting the OVC. That's he's a five-time Hall of Fame.
Five with a chance for six.
That's,
so, yeah,
that's
so
impressive.
Right now, if you go by the lingo of the field hockey coach, he's a five-time Hall of Famer.
Five-time Hall of Famer with the OVC.
I was like, so when Lindsay came back, I was like, how did the Hall of Fame thing? She goes, that's what she wanted to be introduced as a four-time Hall of Famer. I was like,
okay.
All right, that's her prerogative. I don't get it. I just don't get it.
As a four-time Hall of Famer, I guess that is her prerogative.
It's her. She's in those Hall of Fames. I guess she can dictate that.
We'll come back.
It doesn't make sense.
Final hour, it doesn't make any sense. We'll start it off with Kevin Jarvis. That's next.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.